Meeting will please come to order, and Representative Murphy, if you would proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that to amend House File 1184 with the delete A130400 amendment. Delete everything. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is really the meeting that was scheduled for April 3rd at 12:30. We're a little behind the time. I apologize for not having to cancel that meeting and to put you on a waiting stand. However, that was pursuant that we could not complete the bill or the amendment until House Rule 801 was enacted. The Article 1 had to be the House of Representatives portion of Article 1 had to be before rules, and they had to approve the House of Representatives proposed appropriations. And it had come to this committee from that committee. And so just the enrollment of that action then and everything else, we did not get the bill until I delivered the first receivers, the first bills to Representative Detmer at about 20 minutes to 3. And that was the fastest I could. And Representative Detmer received enough bills for his committee people before my committee people got them. And he had the supporting documents. And I personally think that the amendment is a good compromise based on all the hearings that we had. We had about 20 hearings. Four of those included day and evening. We heard over 50 bills. 36 stakeholders shared a little bit about themselves in an effort to build trust. We heard overviews and presentations from over 35 agencies, accounts, and other organizations that deal with our accounts. We carefully reviewed the statements that were made in testimony before the committee and in the request for information sheets that many agencies or individuals or stakeholders presented to our committee. Today starts phase three of building the omnibus bill, and that's revealing the suggested amendment, A1304000, to House File 1184, which were the governor's recommendations. Phase three, to begin phase three of building the omnibus state government bill, we are gathered here to find out what's in the amendment and then to hear from people that want to make comments and answer questions. And Monday, we will discuss in detail any amendments that are sent to us. Hopefully, Representative Detmer is 4 o'clock tomorrow, an appropriate time.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, that might be tough, getting things done by 4 o'clock. We just got the bill right now, and getting our amendments to research people and getting it put together for Monday, if we're going to be voting on it on Monday, that might be tough. just talking to my people, anyway.
Mr. Chair, it was my intent to have the amendments in and then have discussion of the amendments and continuing with public testimony or and questions on Monday and the final vote on Wednesday.
Okay. Good. So the all amendments have to be in by 4 o'clock tomorrow?
I'm asking if that's possible.
Yeah. Representative
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, would it be possible to have those amendments on Monday? That would, you know, if we're not going to vote on it until Wednesday, that would be better for us.
Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Shepherd, would you like to address that?
What is? I don't want to put you on the spot, but you would be doing most of the work on the amendments, I assume, and Ms. Roberts. I knew that you had volunteered to work on the weekend.
Yeah.
There are other committees that you're responsible for that are also having to roll out their bill.
Yeah.
This committee has to complete their work on Wednesday.
Right.
We have to be in Ways and Means on April 15th. There's a later time on Friday.
Representative
Detmer.
I guess we would prefer to have. We haven't even read the bill, Madam Chair, and we would like to have some time over the weekend to really go through it. And if we could have that time to prepare the amendments as we see fit for a Wednesday's vote, that would make more sense for us, and I probably make more sense for the people that have to prepare the amendments for us. I can't speak for them, but I just know that our staff are really well worked.
Madam Chair,
Representative Newton. Oh,
I was just thinking.
You can talk, Representative.
Yeah, but I wanted to address this to you in whether even if the amendments were drafted on Monday and ready a couple hours before we meet. Whether we can even discuss the amendments, we can't vote on them, obviously, because we're not within the time frame, unless you wish to make an exception to the rule. But then the issue of other members not having been able to see and read the amendments prior to the meeting would be an issue as well.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Detmer.
Now, we're not voting on. The voting is going to take place on Wednesday, as I understand.
The vote, Mr. Chair, it was my intent to have the voting on the amendments on Monday and the vote on the final bill on Wednesday.
And that was my understanding also.
Mr. Chair, may I suggest that Representative Detmer hold off on his decision or his agreement or his non-agreement until after we go through the bill and hear what the bill is and go through the spreadsheet. And I will ask again what seems doable.
Mr. Chair, yeah, we can do that. We can do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, good. Okay, Chair Murphy, as you stated, the purpose of today's meeting is to hear, understand, and discuss your delete all amendment, and neither the bill nor the amendment will be moved today. And with that, Chair Murphy, if you would present the delete everything amendment, A13-0400.
I think Ms. Roberts would like to go through the spreadsheet first. And there are two spreadsheets in your packets. And then when we're done with that, then Mr. Shepherd, I've asked Mr. Shepherd to go through the policy and the bill.
Mr. Chair Member, you do have two spreadsheets in your packet. One is a three-page summary spreadsheet, and this represents only the general fund appropriations that spending that are in the bill. But you can see if you look at the last page at the bottom of the A13DE column, the reconciliation to our target of $921,368,000. But I'm going to be walking through the more detailed spreadsheet that shows the all fund spending. It also shows the detail by budget activity for each agency. So that's the, obviously, the multi-page one.
That's the thicker one.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
The thicker one.
And if I go too fast or too slow, you can interrupt me and let me know. So starting with the legislature, on line 11, you'll see the general fund appropriation for the Senate is $44.4 million. Moving down to the House, on line 21, the appropriation for the biennium is $59.7 million. And then the rest of this page shows the base for the various LCC functions. If you move to page 2, let's see, beginning on line 45, the general fund appropriation for the LCC is $31 million for the biennium. The LCC also has an appropriation of $128,000 per year from the Healthcare Access Fund. So the total appropriation would be $31.3 million for the biennium. And then finally, the total for the legislature overall is $135.4 million for all funds. Moving on to the governor's office, you'll see on line 64, the total general fund is $6.457 million for the biennium. And below that, you'll see a line labeled Special Revenue Fund Statutory. This is a provision that we've had in the bill for several years covering, I think, Governor Plenty and I believe also Governor Ventura to specify how much could be spent out of other agencies' budgets for the government relations people within the Office of the Governor. Moving on to the state auditor, I'm not going to go through every line here, but if you look on line 73, the negative $12 million represents the largest part of moving the Office of the State Auditor off of a general fund appropriation onto an enterprise fund. So you'll see reductions in that office's general fund appropriation in this section of the spreadsheet, and then later in the revenue section, there's an offsetting loss of revenue to the general fund. So the change is actually a neutral to the general fund, but it's split up into two parts. The remaining general fund pieces that you see, for example, under the Government Information Division and the Legal and Special Investigations, are the parts of the office that can't be moved to the enterprise fund because those activities can't be charged out to local governments or other entities. So finally, if you move on to page 3, at the very bottom of page 3, you'll see that the general fund appropriation for the office would be $4.1 million for the biennium. That's compared to a base of $17.2 million. But below, on line 122, then you'd see that there would be an appropriation from the enterprise fund of $13.4 million. And that is a statutory appropriation. Moving on to page 4, you'll see the various activities for the Attorney General. And at the very bottom, beginning on line 152, the general fund appropriation, the biennium would be $42.6 million. The Attorney General does receive some direct appropriations from other funds. Those are largely from the state government special revenue fund related to the various health boards providing services to all of the small boards, and then some activities related to environmental investigations. At the bottom of page 4, you'll begin with the Secretary of State, and you can see again there are various budget activities. On page 5, beginning on 175, line 175, is a breakout of the various changes from the base for this office, and that includes $1 million in fiscal year 15 to replace the federal HAVA funds, a reduction to the business services unit that the office discussed when they were here, a base adjustment that you'll see for many of the agencies, and then a one-time appropriation for attorney's fees related to a redistricting lawsuit. So at the very bottom of the Secretary of State section, the general fund appropriation for the biennium would be $12.1 million, and there also is an appropriation of the remaining federal HAVA funds, estimated to be, it's actually a little over $1 million, so I'll change that. Moving down then to the bottom of page 5, you see the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. The board's recommended operating appropriation is $2.019 million, and they also have an open appropriation. This is not part of the board's operation, but it is the cost of the public subsidy program. So the costs for that program are included in the spending target for this committee. You won't see those numbers in the bill because they're a statutory appropriation, but we do have to count them against our target. Moving on to page 6, at the top is the State Investment Board. Their general fund appropriation is $278,000, and that represents the part of their operations that is directly related to investing the general fund itself. For Department of Administrative Hearings, the largest part of this office is the appropriation from the Workers' Compensation Special Fund, which is $14.5 million for the biennium. They also receive some money from the general fund for the Municipal Boundary Adjustment Unit, and then up at sort of the top of that section, sorry, I'm working backwards on that one, on line 221 and above, you'll see some of the one-time changes related to the data practices hearing costs and campaign violations deficiency. So their total general fund appropriation is $738,000 for the biennium. Moving on to page 7 for the Office of Enterprise Technology. The recommended general fund appropriation is $4.95 million for the biennium. You may remember from their presentation that most of this office's activities are done through the Enterprise Technology Fund. So the general fund actually is a small part of their operation, and they've actually taken a reduction to that part of their office. And then on line 255 is the estimated $4 million for the e-government public-private partnership. We heard this language in the committee before the break. I believe it was also discussed in the Government Operations Committee. Moving on to Department of Administration, this takes up a lot of pages in the spreadsheet, so I won't go through all of it, but it does. We do have a breakdown of all of the various activities that are in the Department of Administration. I'm going to note some of the change items. Beginning on line 275, there's an increase to the LEAN program. Moving on to the next page. On line 281, there is a reduction corresponding to the transfer of the EQB to the PCA, and I believe that a bill was introduced today related to that issue to deal with the government operations functions. Moving down to line 306, you'll see an increase of $370,000 for the biennium, and this is for the small agency resource team, which you may also remember as the SMART program. And then finally, at the bottom of the page, on line 319, there's a one-time appropriation of $30,000 for the Nellie Stone Johnson bust in the Capitol. Moving on to page 9, under financial management and reporting, which is the second program within the department, on line 336, there's an increase of $250,000 for the internal audit function. And so the summary for that program is $3.7 million for the biennium. And then we move into what's known as the fiscal agent program within Department of Administration. It includes public broadcasting and also the in lieu of rent. The total appropriation for in lieu of rent is $16.3 million. That's a direct appropriation to the department to cover the costs of the House and Senate space, we don't pay that directly out of our operating budget. The ceremonial space in the Capitol, the mall, those sorts of things. Moving on to page 10, you'll see the public broadcasting breakdown. First is public television. There's a total appropriation of $4 million for the biennium, and this includes the funding increases that were in House File 1421, which was Representative Purcell's bill. For public radio, there are the two different entities that are funded. First is the AMPRS, the public educational radio stations, and their total funding is just a little over $1 million. Sorry, that's on line 383. And that is an increase over the base. And then on line, I need to get my glasses, sorry to lose it, 389. The total appropriation for Minnesota Public Radio is $620,000, and that also includes an increase for Minnesota Public Radio. So the total for public broadcasting, radio, and television together is $5.64 million for the biennium. Moving on to the next page, page 11, the grand totals for the Department of Administration direct appropriation is $41 million from the general fund. For the CAP board, their recommended appropriation is, excuse me, $658,000 for the biennium. And the next large agency is Minnesota Management and Budget. They have one general fund program, the statewide services program, and beginning on line 428, you can see some of the change items that have been funded in part through this bill, including the budget system development and results management initiative. Moving on to the next page. On page 12, again on line 446, you'll see some funding for the enterprise human resources capacity and the enterprise talent management system. And then finally, I'll point out on line 460, there's an adjustment to the overall total initiatives for the department because of the inability to fit all of them within the committee's target. The language in the bill, as Mr. Shepherd will note, is also gives them some flexibility on how to spend this by not specifying specific projects. And then you'll also note there's just the numbers at the bottom of the page for the state employee insurance program. Again, these aren't directly appropriated, so you won't see that in the bill. And the total for MMB is $44.8 million from the general fund for the biennium. Moving on to page 13. At the very top of the page, you'll see some of the various what we call open appropriations within the department, and these include the lease purchase payments for the new accounting system and the indirect cost receipts offset. All of these count against the target for this committee. Department of Revenue, I think one of the last big agencies to get through. Again, you'll see all of their various budget activities. The changes recommended for this department start on page 14. There's a base adjustment of $2.4 million, but that is offset by a reduction that the department had offered up for tax system simplification. There's also $200,000 a year for taxpayer assistance grants, a savings from the electronic wage levy payments language, and then a one-time appropriation of $300,000 for the property tax technical grants. So the total general fund appropriation for tax system management, which is the largest program, is $217.6 million, and that's on line 528. And then they do have another program within the department, the debt collection program, and their total general fund appropriation for that on line 544 is $57.9 million. And the grand total for the Department of Revenue from the general fund is $275.4 million for the biennium, And again, they have some other appropriations from, for example, the Healthcare Access Fund and the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Those are related to the department's costs for collecting those taxes. Now we're coming to some of the small agencies, so I'll try to run through those quickly. They all, you'll note that they all have some small base adjustments, so their funding has increased slightly over the base. For the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission on line 582, their appropriation would be $503,000 for the biennium. For the Black Minnesotans Council on line 591, $591,000 for the biennium. For the Chicano Latino Affairs Council on line 600, $557,000 for the biennium. And then on line 609 for the Asian Pacific Minnesotans, $514,000 for the biennium. And finally, the last of the councils is on the top of page 16, the Indian Affairs Council for $935,000. And those are all general fund appropriations. Coming to the Minnesota Historical Society, their appropriation for their programs and operations is $43.2 million for the biennium, and that includes a $2.4 million increase for including access to historic resources and expanded outreach. Beginning on line 638, you'll see the various fiscal agents that are funded through the Historical Society, and there is one change here. It's on line 645, which is an $80,000 increase to the Minnesota Military Museum. That was House File 1024. And the total for the fiscal agents is $628,000 for the biennium. So moving on to page 17, the total direct appropriation for the Historical Society is $43.8 million. We also count against the target $8.5 million for the Historic Structures Grants Program. This was a program, I believe, that was initially authorized by the Tax Committee, but is counted in this committee's target now. The Minnesota Arts Board, on page 17, the only change for the Arts Board is a small base adjustment on 672. So I will, the total general fund spending for the Arts Board is, on page 18, just a little over $15 million for the biennium. For the Humanities Center, on line 710, you'll see $502,000 total general fund appropriation for the biennium. And then directly below that, I'm showing the Public Facilities Authority. This does not receive a general fund appropriation from this committee, but we did want to remind the committee that the PFA is under the jurisdiction of the committee. So I'm showing the operating expenses that I pulled out of the budget system. For the Science Museum of Minnesota, on line 728, the total appropriation is $2.2 million from the general fund. And then at the bottom of this page, you'll see a change item to the contingent account on line 766. The base for this program was $500,000. This bill has a reduction of $117,000. The contingent accounts are sort of money that is set aside for small emergencies, not natural disasters or that sort of things, but sometimes there are small things that a small agency can't handle, and the spending from this account does vary a lot from biennium to biennium depending on whether there's a need for it or not. Continue on page 19, tort claims appropriations $322,000 for the biennium. And then on the rest, the next three items on this page are retirement related. The first one is the Minnesota State Retirement System, and in this bill's target, we include $7.86 million for the legislators' retirement and the constitutional officers' retirement. And again, this is for the not the current legislators' retirement, but for the pre-1997 program. Yes. Under the Public Employees Retirement Association, you'll see the aid that was agreed to and put into law for the Minneapolis Pension Program, Minneapolis Employees Pension Retirement Program. And then right under that, you'll see the various aid programs that have been in this bill, are part of the base for this bill. For the TRA, which represents the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Program, that was merged into TRA, and then the two programs for St. Paul and Duluth teachers. And I should just note, this is not the funding that's being discussed in the pension bill. This is base funding that is carried in this bill each year. Directly under that, you'll see the Telecommunication Minnesota Fund, and these two appropriations are usually carried in the Commerce Bill, but this bill was referred to the State Government Bill, and I think because the two offices that receive funding from this fund are actually under the jurisdiction of this committee, so we have included that appropriation in this bill at this time. And finally, we're getting close to the end with the Department of Military Affairs. You'll see the breakdown for their maintenance training facilities starting on page 19. And the only change for Department of Military Affairs is on line 825. It's a $149,000 change. So the total for the maintenance training facilities is $13.5 million for the biennium. They also have their general support appropriation of $4.7 million. And then the enlistment incentives program is their largest program in terms of funding, and that's $20.7 million for the biennium. So moving on to the next page, the total for the Department of Military Affairs is $38.9 million for the biennium. That's on line 860. The two other small items you'll see below that on line 862, the special revenue account is the Support Our Troops account. And then that's a portion of the existing license plates. And then on the 865, the Open General Fund is for National Guard that are called to emergency service for the state. For example, when they respond to floods or look for missing people, there's an open appropriation to cover those costs. Finally, moving down to the Department of Veterans Affairs, their first program is the Veterans Services Program. And you can see at the top of the mid part of the page beginning on line 876, those numbers all represent the base numbers for these various programs broken out so that members could see them. And then again for the Claims and Outreach Office. If you move down to the bottom of the page, you'll see the Veterans Lottery ticket is not included in this bill. And then the change items for the department begin on the next page on line, page 22 at the top of the page. Included in addition to the base adjustment is funding for the MAC-V program, an increase of $250,000 per year. The healthcare IT improvement program, the second year operations for the Southeast Minnesota Veterans Cemetery, $200,000 per year in permanent funding for the Honor Guard funding, the funding of Representative Newton's bill for the County Veterans Service Officers grants. On line 908, you'll see the administrative costs for the GI Bill expansion. These are the costs that are just for administering the program. The actual costs of the program are in an open general fund appropriation. And then finally, the Gold Star program, $200,000 for the biennium to replace the federal funding. So the total general fund appropriation for this program is $32.4 million. And then at the very bottom of the page, you'll see on line 925, you'll see the cost of $800,000 for increasing the GI Bill, expanding eligibility for that program, the post-secondary education assistance. The second program in Veterans Affairs is the healthcare program. The breakout going down to line 937 just shows you the base general fund by each home. And then on line 940 is the second half of the appropriation for healthcare IT improvement. And this is slightly reduced from the governor's recommendation. It's $425,000 less. Moving on to page 23, the grand total for the Department of Veterans Affairs on line 949 is $125.98 for the biennium. And then you'll also see the small cancellation of $110,000 for the Minnesota Ambulance Association grant. And then at the bottom of page 23 is just the summary by fund. So you'll see that the general fund direct appropriation in this bill is $893,635,000 for the biennium. And then the other spending direct appropriations by fund are broken out after out of that. On line 976, there's also open appropriations of $14.75 million that are accounted against the target of this committee. You'll see the small cancellation. And then the on line 986, the revenue changes that are included in this bill, that's a total, it's a loss of revenue of $13.1 million, and that represents the transfer of the state auditor's revenues from the general fund to the enterprise fund. Last page, at the very top of the page, beginning on line 989, you'll see some of the revenue portions of the non-general fund changes that I think were included up above, and I do see that I've got two things I need to delete on here. I'm sorry. Those are the lottery ticket and license plate revenues on line 992 and 993. So the next version will not have those on there. And then finally, the general fund reconciliation at the bottom of the spreadsheet, the total general fund spending is $908,250,000, and then again the offsetting revenues, so the net spending, because our target is a net target, is $921,368,000.
Good, thank you. And now,
Mr. Chair.
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, before we go on, and I thank you, Ms. Roberts, I would like to state a few facts about our target. I should have done that before Ms. Roberts started, but the Ways and Means Committee passed a budget resolution, and in that budget resolution, they were told us that we could we would have a target of $921,368,000, which was an increase of $26 million over base. We got a sub-target or an internal veterans target of $9.3 million above the base to $170,004,000 for the Departments of Veterans Affairs and Military Affairs. And we had a tails target for 2016 to 2017 of $927,291,000, which was an increase of $28 million above base. Within the target, there was an increase of 1% for fiscal year 14 and 1% for fiscal year 15 for each agency, which would, in Ways and Means mind and the setters of the target, I assume, cover at least part of the state contracts that were adopted earlier in this session. And there was also allowed for the future pension bills that will come before our committee, or come before the Ways and Means Committee, target $42 million.
Good. Thank you, Chair Murphy. Do we want Mr. Shepherd or Mr. Cleary to continue with the spreadsheets?
Continue with the bill.
Continue with the bill. Okay. Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair and members, the first article of statutory language begins on the bottom of page 16. It's the military and veterans provisions, and Mr. Cleary is going to walk the committee through those.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Madam Chairwoman, please let me know if you'd rather I change the pace here. It's speed it up or slow it down. In Article 3, Section 1, it deals with the ability of a National Guardsman to take who happens to be a state or municipal officer or employee to take leave, paid leave, for active military service during the year. And the bill would increase the flexibility to take for the employee to take it at any time during the year, in any amount during the year, up to the 15-day total. So in other words, an employer would no longer have the ability to restrict them to taking it all at once, all 15 days at one time. This has impact on employees like firemen, for example, who work unusual shifts. Sections 2 to 5, County Veteran Service Officer Grant Program modified. The CVSO program currently provides grants to county veteran service officers on a three-year rotating basis, with one-third of the counties being eligible each year. However, a county becomes ineligible for a grant if it has hired a new county veteran service officer and that service officer does not get certified in a reasonable time, within a one-year period, I believe it is. This would, and also that ineligibility would continue for another three-year cycle. So the bill would remove that ineligibility as soon as the person does get certified. And as you probably know or recall, the state of Minnesota has a responsibility for training new CVSOs and certifying them. It also increases the grant amounts that would go to counties, and it would base them, it would provide a grant each year rather than on a three-year basis, and it would increase those grant amounts particularly for the largest counties and zero them out for some of the very smallest counties. Section 6 to 8 deal with Minnesota GI Bill. The Minnesota GI Bill provides tuition assistance, essentially, and some living expenses for veterans who've used up all other veterans' educational benefits if they still have some time to go before they graduate. And this particular provision makes some small changes to that program. It piggybacks on federal law for a definition of surviving spouse or child, and it also considers the new Veterans Retraining Assistance Program, the federal program, as yet one more subtraction that has to be made before benefits become available. Section 9, evidence of rehabilitation for certain veterans. These are veterans who have committed a youthful indiscretion by breaking a law, by committing a crime, and we're talking about relatively serious crimes here. Crimes that would typically be a barrier to the person's ability to obtain certain public employment or to get state licensure for certain private sector jobs, as a felon, for example, or in some cases as a gross misdemeanor. As you know, the court sometimes looks favorably upon such youthful offenders and directs them into the military if the military will have them. And the law, the current rehabilitation law, provides a means for a person to demonstrate rehabilitation, typically by completing probation and parole. This would add one more way by simply getting by getting an honorable discharge from the military, the person would be assumed to have sufficient evidence of rehabilitation. And I should point out, the veterans like to say this is not a get-out-of-jail-free card by any type, by any means. Section 10, veteran-owned small business contracts. The current law provides a bid preference on state contracts for goods and services to small businesses that are more than half veteran-owned. And it's a discretionary program. Most agencies are not required to do it, but they are typically happy to provide that bid preference. Last year, the legislature authorized counties to create similar programs, bid preference programs for county goods and services. And this bill, this section of the bill, Section 10, would authorize cities to also give a preference to veteran-owned small businesses for their goods and services. So for a township, for example, that would typically be like mowing roadsides out in the township. Under the program, a veteran business that bids $106, for example, would be considered equal to a non-veteran business that bids $100. Section 11 it deals with eligibility for the Peace Officer Reciprocity Exam. Peace Officer Exam, licensing exam, has rather specific requirements for the type of education a candidate must get prior to being eligible to even take the exam. Well, the reciprocity license exam is designed to give credit to prior experience, policing experience, say in another state or in the military. So, for example, under current law, a person with 5 years police experience as a military policeman or a provost would be eligible to take the exam, but not until they're out of the military, not until having received an honorable discharge. This bill would allow them to take it much like anybody else who's still employed somewhere, would allow somebody who's employed as a service member to take the exam. However, they couldn't become, even if they pass the exam, they couldn't become eligible until after getting their discharge. And Section 12 repeals a CVSO law that's being superseded. So that's it for military and veteran affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Cleary. And also, thank you for answering the questions I had. You helped a lot.
You're welcome.
Mr. Shepard, would you like to continue?
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to continue with the state government operations parts on Article 4, starting on page 25 of the bill. And the first four sections of this article come from House File 1297. This was Representative Carlson's bill that dealt with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. The first section clarifies that the chair of the Legislative Advisory Commission rotates between a member of the Senate and a member of the House at the start of every odd-numbered year. The second section allows the LCC to accept gifts and grants for purposes related to its duties. The sections 3 and 4 relate to the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement and basically provide that the policies that commission has dealing with expense reimbursements are going to be the same as other legislative commissions, and it strikes a requirement that the commission then report to the legislature on its expenses. Section 5 is a different topic. This is from House File 1197, Representative Beard's bill dealing with the legislative auditor, and this strikes the requirement that the auditor audit the financial statements every year of the state of Minnesota. It strikes some obsolete references to some groups that don't exist anymore, and it provides that the auditor would audit, as resources permit, the financial statements of the state. Section 6 is from the same bill. This provides that, as resources permit, the legislative auditor should audit, should do data security audits. Section 7 is from the same bill, House File 1197, providing that the chief executive officers of an organization subject to audit is required to notify the legislative auditor if they have information indicating that public money has been spent improperly, or that I think this was added in this committee, that data classified as not public would be accessed unlawfully. Section 8 it starts a different topic. Sections 8 and 9 relate to the Office of the Secretary of State. These are from House File 576, Representative Bernardi's bill. Section 8 allows the Secretary of State to accept funds from local government units for technology projects for the state's election system, and also to accept federal funds. It provides that if the federal funds are not required, don't require the state to maintain its effort, that the funds don't have to go through the process for review of federal funds. If the Secretary of State accepts the federal funds and the terms of the grant do require the state to maintain its effort, then they would have to go through the full review process in current law. Then there's a reporting requirement on this section. Section 9 is similar, but with respect to the address confidentiality program operated by the Secretary of State. It allows the Secretary to accept funds and requires a report. Section 10 is from House File 651, Representative Purcell's bill, that provides that the state auditor, in consultation with the Association of Townships, League of Cities, and the Association of Counties, can charge a one-time user fee to governmental entities that want to participate in their small city and town accounting software system. It establishes an account and appropriates money in the account to the auditor for the costs associated with the development, maintenance, and distribution of that software. It provides that if the auditor stops providing this service, they would have to rebate all the money in the account back to the participating users. The next section of the bill is one of several sections from Representative Simon's section, House File 253. The general concept here, as Ms. Roberts mentioned when she went over the spreadsheet, is that the state auditors would have an enterprise fund into which would be deposited the fees that she collects from auditing units of local government. So this part of the office would be funded from this enterprise fund instead of from by a direct appropriation from the state general fund. The fund actually is created on section 13 on page 30. I believe this is the same language the committee saw in House File 253. The next three sections of the bill are from Representative Carlson's House File 1297, the LCC bill. These three deal with the Compensation Council. When the council was first, that makes recommendations for salaries of legislators, judges, and agency heads, when that council was first created, it was required to report recommendations by December 31st. And the statute was changed a number of years ago to make its recommendations come later, but the legislature didn't get around to changing the appointments dates for that council in connection with its changed reporting duty. So Section 14 provides that the council would be created in the odd-numbered year instead of the even-numbered year. It provides that appointments would be made at the beginning of January when the new legislature comes into session in the odd-numbered year. And then Section 16 requires this council to report by March 15th instead of May 1st, with the idea that this would be more timely for legislative deliberations. On page 32, Section 17 is from the House File 1184, the governor's bill as introduced by Representative Murphy. And this deals with agencies' IT costs and transferring a portion to the Office of Enterprise Technology. The last sentence in this section is new, and it provides that a transfer is not required under this section if it would be prohibited by federal law or would cause a loss of federal funds. Section 18 is back to Representative Carlson's bill, House File 1297, dealing with the LCC. This strikes references to the Subcommittee on Governmental Accountability, which later in the bill is repealed. This is a subcommittee of the Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy. Section 19 on page 33 is House File 1291, Representative Kahn's bill, provides for continuing appropriations at the base level if for 1 year if a major appropriation bill to fund agencies is not enacted by July 1 of an odd-numbered year. Page 34, Section 20, Federal Contingency Planning. This section is derived from House File 172, Representative Pepin's bill. It's not the same, but the concept here is that each executive branch agency that receives federal funds would have to notify the budget committees if they believe there's potential for a significant reduction in the amount of federal funds the agency would receive in the next biennium, and it specifies the contents of that notice. The next several sections are from House File 1184, the governor's budget bill. The committee heard, these are provisions the committee heard at one of its last hearings relating to the Office of Enterprise Technology. Section 21 refers to a convenience fee that the office can enter into, and Section 22 is the substantive part of that on page 35, which allows the office to enter into a contract with a private entity to manage the state's North Star system and allows for compensation of the private entity through a fee. So this is, I believe this language is identical to what was in House File 1184 when the committee considered it. On page 36, Section 23 is, I believe, from House File 279, and this provides that the legislative auditor, instead of the state auditor, is going to audit a dairy board. Section 24, the next several sections are language that was suggested by the AMPERS group of public radio stations. These, in some ways, clarify some of the definitions. These all relate to what stations have to do to qualify to get grants from the state. And so on Section 24, you see some language relating to just citing the specific parts of federal regulations that have to be complied with. That's the same on page 37 at the bottom of Section 25 and on page 38. At the top of page 39 provides, under current law, if the state funds are distributed to a public television or non-commercial radio station and they're used to purchase assets and the station sells those assets within 5 years, the net amount of the proceeds has to be paid back to the state. This section on the top of page 39 would allow the Commissioner of Administration to approve use of the funds derived from the sale to purchase new equipment for similar purposes by these public broadcasting stations. Section 39, or Section 27 on page 39 is the, I believe, the last section from Representative Carlson's bill. We're dealing with the LCC. This strikes the authority of the Mississippi River Parkway Commission to subpoena witnesses and records. Page 39, Section 28 is from House File 279, Representative Simon's bill, I believe. This transfers from the state auditor to the legislative auditor the duty to audit Job Z programs and requires that all parties to these agreements would have to provide the legislative auditor with all documents that he needs to accomplish his audits. Section 29 and continuing on to page, the top of page 40 is from House File 253 dealing with the State Auditor Enterprise Fund. This is just a change in cross-reference back to the section creating the Enterprise Fund. Section 30 relates to a section earlier dealing with the rotation of chairs of the Legislative Advisory Commission and provides that the Senate would chair in the current in current year. The repealers are Section 3.304 subdivisions 1 and 5, which currently creates an Office of Legislative Research, which there is none. And it also provides that LCC expenses are to be split and paid for evenly between the House and the Senate, which is not the way things are funded. The LCC is funded, as Ms. Roberts pointed out earlier, by a direct appropriation. Section 3.885, Subdivision 10, is a repealer of the Subcommittee on Governmental Accountability. And Section 6.58 is a repealer of the law that says that the general fund is to be used to pay expenses of the examinations conducted by the state auditor. This repeal is connected to the creation of the enterprise fund earlier in the article. Mr. Chair, the next article is some things from the Department of Revenue that you may recall that Matt Mossman from the department explained these when the committee was during one of its last hearings when the committee was discussing House File 1184. There are a couple, I'll describe these just categorically. Sections 1, 9, and 10 transfer the duty to administer the 50-cent surcharge on auto insurance from the Department of Public Safety to the Department of Revenue. There's not a new surcharge. It's 50 cents on an automobile policy every 6 months. It's taking the existing law and just transferring who administers it, because the Department of Revenue felt it could do this more efficiently than the Department of Public Safety. Most of the remainder of the sections in this article deal with electronic filing of information by taxpayers to the Department of Revenue. Under the current law, various types of taxpayers, if you have more than $10,000 in 1 year, then you have to file electronically the next year. This changes it, so once you hit the $10,000 threshold, you have to file electronically every year from then on. And this was something that the department felt would increase their efficiency. The repealers at the end of this article in Section 13 are there's a repealer of the Section 168A.40, which is the auto theft prevention surcharge codified in the laws governing the Department of Public Safety. Sections 9 and 10 of this article repeat the same language, but codified in the laws governing the Department of Revenue. And the last repealer on page 49 is Section 270C.145. This is a lease purchase appropriation for integrated tax software, and it's repealed here because the payments have been completed already. And Article 6, at the end of the bill, is titled Conforming Amendments. The first one deals with the technology lease purchase appropriation and strikes a cross reference to a section that I just talked about that was repealed. And the Section 2 relates to the transfer of duties from public safety to revenue for that 50-cent auto surcharge. Section 7, I will describe conceptually. It repeals the Minnesota Sunset Act totally. The repeal is in Section 7. And the rest of this section, the sections 1 to 5 of this article, strike cross references to the Sunset Act and other parts of statute. Mr. Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the statutory language.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. So at this point, I think we'll open up for questions from the committee of Chair Murphy and the staff, if anyone has any questions.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I remember the chairman speaking to the fact that we had numerous bills, 40-some bills, I think, that came before the committee, and that we gave them plenty of time for a hearing. I don't believe, though, that I can remember that we had a hearing on the elimination of the Sunset Commission. And, I have some heartburn about the fact that here it is in an omnibus bill and we didn't have, an opportunity to have a thorough discussion, including taking testimony from various groups who might have some desire to have that still left in.
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, we heard over 50 bills, and the repeal of the Sunset Commission was not in that. It was a financial decision for the LCC. In our target, we didn't get any spending money. We didn't get any money to increase appropriations that we would like to. In the next session, or this year, the Sunset Commission has the responsibility, according to law, to review the four councils, which they just reviewed last year and made recommendations for some changes, but not for elimination. And now they have to, again, review those four councils when they just completed that. They also have to review the largest departments, the Department of Health, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Human Rights is smaller, the Department of Education. It's my understanding the work of the commission has been done with the volunteer help from House Research and Senate Research. And there was no additional money funded or passed on to us for LCC improvements or hiring of staff at the level that they would need. Now, Mr. Hubinger did testify about the needs of the LCC, and as did the revisor, as did several other people when Controller Reinholz came before us and Mr. Hubinger came before us on that night where we were finishing up. But they told us that the problems that they're having with keeping staff and operating efficiently and cooperatively with all the departments, with many fewer employees than we had 10 years ago or 12 years ago. When the Sunset was Commission was imposed or voted on and supported, there was a vision. We haven't been true to that vision. And so, with having no spending money to add where we like, remember, all total, we have over a half a billion dollar deficit. And although our target is better than the State Department's target has been in many years, because we have been woefully short, our departments have suffered. But we can't ask them to do any more with fewer people. And to review the Department of Health, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Education, and the Department of Human Rights, without even one employee, I think is disingenuous and is lying to the people of Minnesota. And so I'm recommending that we sunset the Sunset Commission.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. Well, I guess I hear that it's a matter of having no money to fund an effort that ultimately looks at the efficiencies or whether or not commissions and departments should be continued into the future. We don't have any money for that, but yet I'm fully aware that we're going to increase revenue by a couple of billion dollars in any budget you look at, and this budget certainly has more money in it. And so, Madam Chair and Chairman, and respectfully to my colleagues on this committee, we didn't have a fair discussion about this, and what we've just heard is that we don't have money for it, but in fact, there's all kinds of money in all kinds of pots, and we're, the vision, of course, was that eventually this could have a real benefit, but So I'll leave it at that. I don't know. My colleagues on my side of the aisle certainly are very disappointed, especially when we got this presented at the last minute in the last part of the bill. It doesn't bode well, I don't think, on how further discussions will go regarding the bill in the next few days.
Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, and having served on the Sunset Commission. Excuse me, last session, one thing that we heard in the discussions as we were starting up the Sunset Commission and looking at the councils that we did last year, but one thing we heard was we got testimony from people that run the Sunset Commission in Texas. And Texas does a very good job with their Sunset Commission, but they have 25 or more employees full-time dealing with this, doing this study, doing this in-depth investigation all year long. And we set it up last year with no employees, no staff, and by the generosity of the LCC and our House and Senate research, we threw more work onto their plates, and these were relatively small commissions that we looked at last year. We're looking at some of the largest departments of government, and we're doing it with no additional staff, nobody dedicated to do it. It would be, as Representative Murphy said, it would be disingenuous and lying to the public that we're actually doing a good job just by having a sunset commission. And so I guess I support what's in the bill.
Thank Mr. you. Chairman?
Yes.
So I can respond. Then I think maybe what we should have had possibly it was would have been a bill or an amendment to this bill that would have beefed up looked at some of the other budgets of the other agencies that are getting increases and give them the proper resources to get the job done, not just eliminating it after 1 year. So, that sounds to me like a potential amendment before 4 o'clock if I can get it done before then. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. You know, I just had a general overview of the bill, 54 pages. Can you explain, we look at a lot of the parts of the bill, there's a lot of increases to the accounts, and with the base adjustment, how do we use logic and how do we do that when we have increases in the accounts? And then we're using the bases to do that. And was this done with fee increases, or how do we do that?
Chair Murphy?
Mr. Chair.
Just a general
observation.
I believe
what you're asking is it was part of our target.
Well, we had...
Representative Dittmer.
Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, we had increases across the board in the budget, but if you take a look at the base adjustment, what type of logic did we use for those increases? Was it through the use of fees, or how did we do that?
Mr. Chair,
Chair Murphy,
Representative, if I understand the question correctly, it was 1% in fiscal year 14 and 1% fiscal year 15.
Representative Dittmer.
Well, I haven't gone through line by line and added them up, but Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, we had 50 bills. Could you explain how many of the 50 bills are actually in the final bill?
Representative Murphy or Ms. Conley, perhaps. And if I might, Representative Dittmer, I think a lot of our military bills have gone separately because you had they went to finance. So
our taxes.
Their taxes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Ms. Conley, do you have a number?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Murphy.
If the line of questioning that Representative Benson started, when I opened my remarks, I said that one of the reasons that we did not have the bill completed was because of Article 1, and that was the bill for the House of Representatives that had to go through, the Rules Committee. And the Rules Committee commenced today at 11:30 and passed the adoption of the House resolution or the House appropriation at 5 after 12 or whatever time it took. But the LCC and the Senate are also part of Article 1. And so the minority did not get the numbers, and I said that, until 2:45, probably when I delivered the spreadsheets and so forth. And that's when I, too, received the total on appropriation, or Article 1, which is the appropriations for the LCC, the House of Representatives and the Senate.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Do you have any follow-up questions, Representative Detmer?
Mr. Chair, no, I guess we're waiting on the number of bills.
Yes, and while Ms. House is getting that, I think Representative Leidiger had a question.
Well, thank you. I just want to start with and ask for a clarification on that 1%. Are you saying that's a 1% above baseline that we're spending here?
Representative Murphy.
1% addition for the coverage of the contract. Maybe Ms. Roberts can say it in a different way. It's more understandable.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, the 1% represents a 1% calculation of the fiscal year 14 and 15 general fund base for compensation expenses only. So it's not the total base, operating base for an agency. It's only related to compensation costs. And we did receive these numbers from the Department of Management and Budget and then had a calculation that we used for each agency.
Okay. Representative Leidiger.
Thank you. Does that explain the... incremental increases, the small incremental increases all across the entire spreadsheet? Is that the explanation?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and Representative Leidiger, any time you see a change item that's labeled base adjustment, that's what that represents.
Any follow-ups?
Yes.
Mr. Leidiger.
And the rationale on that 1% increase that came from Rules Committee?
No.
I'm just having I'm just trying to make this connection. So where is that increase coming from?
It came from
Murphy.
Well, yeah, it came from Ways and Means Committee when they adopted the budget resolution.
The target figures, right?
Representative yes. Leidiger, yeah. Okay, any
thank you.
Questions?
Well, I want to go back to question on... I know we've already discussed it, the Sunset Commission, and repealing that. You know, we put that in, and so that we can look at government and eliminate programs when it seems appropriate. And to me, what this is saying is that there's zero desire to keep a lid on the growth of government. And I keep hearing this, and it's as though there's no desire for the majority party, really, to keep a lid on its spending. And you go, and we go back, and you mentioned, Madam Chair, you know, gee, we haven't had increases in funding for employees, government employees. But you know, when are we going to get that payoff on technology that we've invested for so many years? And I keep bringing that up. And have so the entire year, and yet it's being ignored, and we just want to continually spend and grow government, as opposed to using those force multipliers, those tools that we have to reduce the numbers within government. And so I hear that, and I hear about, you know, oh, I'll forget the Sunset Commission, we're just going to eliminate that. And I see zero desire on the part of the majority to do anything about keeping a lid on government. And the taxpayers out there see this. They're all watching what we do. Why do we have to do another 1% beyond what the base is, for instance? It just is mind-boggling to me.
And we have discussed that. Well, we didn't discuss the Sunset Commission. That would have been a great time for us to really kind of lay it out as to why we do what we do here in government, why we even came up with this Sunset Commission. Would have been a great time to have that argument. Instead, what I heard, I mean, and, you know, you're the chair, but you really, you lectured us and said, no, no, we're going to, you know, we, you know, you tried to explain it away. Well, it didn't wash. Doesn't wash with me. And I want the public to know that this is wrong, what we do here. We don't try to keep a lid on government spending, and it just shows right here in this bill just how obvious it is.
Thank you. Chair Murphy, would you like to respond?
Not that in particular, but I think this bill, there were some people that listened to Representative Leidiger. There's two accounts in here that said they were just fine with the governor's recommendations. So somebody's listening. How long can we go? How many more years can we go talking about jobs when state employees are leaving trained, skilled state employees are leaving? And what we heard that night from the reviser was that the last person that left doubled their salary. People are coming to the age of retirement. We haven't changed their wages for 5 years. How long can we go without changing the circumstances under which they're working? Employees are doing more work more efficiently, and yet continuously we're trashing what expectations are increasing, and we're not improving working conditions at all. How long can departments go? I asked MMB yesterday, how many FTEs do you have that aren't filled? 29. We have greater expectations for them to work in cooperation with the other departments and get more things under their umbrella. And yet, we're not offering enough money for them to continue to do their initiatives. I don't have all the answers. This is my first experience with state government finance, chairing it. I didn't have any input when I was on state government finance 2 years previously, because the minority was closed out completely, except for the speeches that they made in committee on those days. We're trying to arrive at a bill that we can take and go into conference with the Senate. If we can't do that, then your goals and input are viewed as block. We can't go into conversation then with the other body. That's not good government. We have another year of the biennium to go, where we can continue the journey that we have made. We started out with a lot of bumps. My gosh, the first time there was the roll call asked, I was shocked. I thought, oh my gosh. But we've come a long way to arriving at understandings and some things that are accepted and included. And not nearly as much as some other things that people wanted even more. Working together. I'm sorry there wasn't more time. I asked Representative Detmer when I asked, and he said no, he needed more time. I said, let's think about it then. There are ways that we can get done. But when I was working on the sunset thing, I thought, I can't find as much money. I can't find $200,000 to put in there, because if we did that, then they would go and say, my gosh, that's a growth in government. And we're doing it for ourselves, no less than the departments that we're responsible for funding. Maybe you will come up with a solution. Maybe if we set 9 o'clock on Monday, there will be an amendment that comes with a solution. But keeping something where we're going to have failure at, I think it's untruthful. I thought it would make a wave. I didn't think it would be a tsunami. But I don't read you all. Completely. All the time. But I am willing to work with you all the time. And I've offered that over and over. And I know we didn't have time, enough time to talk about all the bills. And I know we didn't talk about this one.
I'm on the loop.
But when you're trying to balance thirty accounts.
Yeah, she's.
And come up even. Something gives, and this was in the time that I had available. This was the best I could do. This bill can become better, but your better and my better aren't always the same. But that's not meaning that I'm wrong or that you're wrong. We can do this. And we can do this by Wednesday. And we can do this through speeches. Or we can do this with a let's roll up our sleeves and get at it attitude. Or have roll calls? And
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Madam Chair, and members. To the Sunset Commission, and looking at government functions and looking at eliminating and reducing what government are looking at departments and eliminating them, that's our job. We all ran for the legislature, and that's our job as legislators to look at that. The committee process that we do, government operations, state government finance, that's the job that we have to do, is look at those parts of government and see what can be fixed and see what can be made better. Health, if you're on Health and Human Services, you should be looking at that budget. That's our job as legislators. Having a commission, if we're not going to fund it and fund it properly so it can do its job, is just putting a gimmick out there to say, make us feel good. And we got something here to make us feel good that's looking over government, and we can fool the public about that. But if it's not funded properly, then it can do its job. And that was one thing we heard from the people who testified from Texas, who have a very good Sunset Commission, and I wish ours was set up that way, with 25 plus employees and a budget that can, that so they can do the investigation and looking into departments like they have to. And then I'd stand and I'd be fighting against getting rid of it also. But if we're going to do it with no money, which we did last year, and we're going to have to do this year if we don't eliminate it, is just fooling the public and fooling ourselves. And we can do that job ourselves. I mean, that's what we all ran for. That's what we all are here in the legislature to do, to make government efficient. And to rely on something else to do our job is obfuscating our responsibility. So with that, I'll be quiet.
Thank you. And Representative Leidinger, if you'd like to respond.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, building this bill, building government, kind of like building a house, and you know, you were trying to shape this up. Well, the Sunset Commission is like a saw, and what you're doing is it's as though you're giving up your saw. So no longer are you going to cut anything. That's what that Sunset Commission was all about, and why we're not funding that, I don't know why. But the Sunset Commission was also, if you recall, kind of going forward hand in hand with the baseline budgeting that we tried to get passed, and that was vetoed by the governor. Both of those were tools to get government under control. Baseline budgeting, so we could basically build our budgets from scratch, get rid of the things that we don't need to do, and then have that additional Sunset Commission that would review government and eliminate programs that we didn't need to. And people gotta realize that both of those are now going away. We got one passed, but now, you know, the baseline budgeting, we never got through the governor. And now you're want to take away Sunset Commission. To me, and the people should realize, it seems as though we're taking away all these tools that we're trying to put in place to help us right-size government. And they're going away. The tools, we've lost those tools.
You know, at this point, and I'll call on Representative Detmer and Representative Dean, but if we can get away from the speechifying, all of us.
Well, I had two against one. You gave me a retort. I'm done.
Yeah, I understand, and I'm not picking on you, Representative Leidinger. But I think really for now, and that doesn't mean we can't go on later with this, but for right now, let's stick to the to the amendment to the bill and to the spreadsheets, and see if we can direct our questions to that. Representative Detmer, I believe you had a question.
Yeah, I think we got the number of bills that are in the bill, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Yes, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Yes, I said that in my opening remarks that we had heard over 50 bills, and although this was quickly collated, 21 bills are in here, and 33 of the bills that we heard were sent to other committees. With that, so that's all the collation we've done so far.
Representative Detmer?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know Representative Dean brought it to my attention on the floor today. On page 24, line 24.3, and maybe Mr. Cleary could help me on this one. Did we actually pass the amendment regarding the evidence of rehabilitation? Did we actually change the wording to gross misdemeanor and felony, or was that something that was added prior to putting this bill together? I'm
Mr. Cleary?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Representative Detmer, I believe we didn't, I'm pretty certain we did not pass it in committee, but we inserted that language in putting this bill together.
Okay. I think
Representative
Mr. Chair, and I think Representative Simon was I think we were going back and forth on this, and I think I agree with the language. You know, I was assuming that I would have to have an amendment put together for next week to change that language. What's the policy there? Do we have to still put an amendment or just leave it the way it is, Mr. Chair?
Representative, I would say, and I'll defer to Mr. Cleary, but I would say as long as it's in the amendment here, we don't have to amend that.
Okay. Okay.
Is that right? Okay. Representative Dean, you had a question? Let me address Mr. Dean.
Well, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, I know we spent a lot of time talking about the Sunset Commission, and, you know, forgive me for being a freshman, but is there anything that precludes us from looking at a particular program or a particular thing at any time during the legislature and determining that we are not efficiently using the money and then doing away with that if we all decide that this is not good use of taxpayers' money? Is there, I mean, by repealing or by sunsetting the sunset, do we lose that ability or do we retain that ability to still do that?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair, it seems to me that the responsibility of the legislature and a committee, a finance committee, is to do exactly what we're asking the Sunset Commission to do. And if somebody brought to the attention to a committee that something should be looked at, that committee should have the responsibility to investigate. And so, by virtue of our election and assignment for to committees, it is our responsibility to do exactly that, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Excuse me. When I talked about the number of bills that we heard, and the number, and then was asked if they were included, I'm not saying, I never intended to make anyone think that the whole bill is in here, but portions of the bills or conversations from the discussion of the bills are reflected in this document. For instance, the federal the discussion that we had on Representative Pepin's bill, in which there was a roll call and it was defeated, that bill is still reflected in here, in that we're asking the agencies to notify the committees if there's going, not a report, but at least a notification if the federal actions of the federal government are going to create a problem for state funding. So that was in the discussion between Representative Simon and Representative Pepin that most everybody seemed to agree on. And but that, and rather than hold the bill over for possible inclusion, a roll call was asked for. And so we had a roll call, and then the bill was defeated. But I thought that, and the people that I discussed with, including Representative Pepin, thought that the discussion that had taken place reflected enough agreement to try to pursue that idea a little bit, so we weren't just discounting the whole idea that the federal government could do something and cause harm to us, and we wouldn't be aware of it. And so we tried several different things past several different people in between last week and this week, and we've got the idea in through that notification. And so the whole bill might not be in there, but there were some changes that were made based on conversations that had taken place either between the members and the testifiers or the members and the members.
Good, thank you. Representative Howe.
Mr. Chair, I reluctantly pulled the mic toward me to talk because I bit my tongue quite a few times here, but the comment and in response to Representative Dean is that we have that preview to do that. I understand that, but the problem is without zero-based budgeting, without a sunset commission, there's really no dialogue here. There's no And I'm a big fan of zero-based budgeting and have been dealing with budgets for probably over 20 years. Zero-based budgeting really gives you something to look at to see exactly what line item doesn't work. Here, we don't get that opportunity. We get great big numbers, great big programs. We don't get really down in the weeds to take a look at that item. And I guess I missed that piece. That's why I actually submitted a bill for zero-based budgeting. And I think that's where the rubber meets the road, and that's what needs to be done. But without a tool like that, you just don't get there. And that's my problem with where we currently are, and I'll leave it at that, and we'll go on.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Yes, Representative Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You asked us to kind of maybe be a little bit more global on the bill and things, and I guess I'd ask for some clarification, if I could, from Chair Murphy and yourself, too, Mr. Chair, as to how we might be proceeding. And I guess a couple questions just in the way of positioning this. The numbers that we see in the different allocations that are on here, are those subject to change where if this committee thought that an area was worthy of more or less funding, is that still available, or are we pretty much locked into the numbers that are in each of the line items?
I'll defer to Representative Murphy on that.
Mr. Chair, general fund items, and Ms. Roberts could clarify more.
Ms. Roberts.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, our target set by the Ways and Means Committee is a net general fund target, and so we do need to fit the spending within that target. As the chair mentioned when she was introducing the bill, we actually have two targets set for this committee. There's the overall target of $921,368,000, and then there was a sub-target within that for the Department of Veterans and Military Affairs of $9.3 million over the base for those two. So
what I'm hearing, and I'd like verification or clarification, that within the target numbers, this committee has the authority then to shift funds from line item to line item as long as we stay within the nets of the two targets that we're looking at.
And if it's general fund money.
Representative Murphy, yes. That's correct. Representative Driscoll.
So to, as I sat back and listened to the discussion today, the Sunset Commission, I think people do feel that there is some benefit from that from both sides of the aisle, the majority and the minority party right now. Is it possible that we could modify the schedule for the Sunset Commission and find some funds within this to do some things? And the reason I ask that question is my experience in local government. We rely heavily on our commissions and our staff to bring the decision makers information that they themselves are unable to with time or are otherwise qualified to be able to go in and to look at those things on a regular basis. And we'll want those individuals to bring forward information for the consideration by the body. And I'm wondering if we think that it has to be one end of the pendulum or the other, or if there isn't a use for this tool called the Sunset Commission, that we could do some partial funding, choose some items that we would want to be looking at, and find a way over a period of biennies to be able to make this a tool. As Representative Nelson said, Texas has been here and they've got a staff. I consider myself to be learned on government, but I don't consider myself to be an expert on every line item and every paperclip that every department purchases. And I guess it's maybe more of a consideration or a statement. I don't know if it necessarily warrants any kind of a response, other than is that something within the realm that we could be looking at doing to try to help us as decision makers get a better idea without saying let's sunset the Sunset Commission and look for some dollars. I did hear $200,000 that we don't have. Maybe we could find $50,000, $75,000, or $100,000 and do an audit in one particular area instead of saying it's 0 or 100 miles an hour. And those are our two options.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, I think that's a possibility. There are other possibilities. Someone recommended another idea to me this afternoon. Representative Nelson might be able to help me answer the question on the big reviews that are supposed to take place this year of the human services and health and education. Are you on a schedule, or as Representative O'Driscoll just said, could we limit the number of reviews that have to take place, or parts of reviews, or whatever?
Mr. Chair and Madam Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, that's set in statute what we have to do. There was a schedule set out on the original Sunset Commission bill. It was set out. The large agencies don't sunset. They don't go away. We can review them and make recommendations, and they don't go away if we don't pass anything. It's the small boards, like the ones that we did last year, we looked at, that if we don't pass a bill, they automatically sunset and go away. But that's actually a lie in itself too, because they don't go away. The functions continue. The people working for them continue. The expenses to government continue. They're just transferred from the boards of color, which were the ones that most of the ones we did last year, their functions are transferred to the Department of Administration, and the Department of Administration then has that function, and it's part of their goal and part of their job, and the money doesn't go away. So we really aren't sunsetting anything. And that's the one thing that's the way the bill is structured. We really don't get rid of anything. It's just that we move the function from a board here and give it to the Department of Administration. So we're actually giving legislative authority and stuff, and we're giving it to the governor. So we're giving the governor more power. So I don't, that's another reason why the bill doesn't work. The other thing is, last year as we went through the beginning process and the first meetings, it was an agreement by all the people on the commission, including Representative Kiffmeyer, who carried the bill, and Representative Banyan, who was part of the bill last year, was idea was that we're not going out there to get rid of government and cut government. It was to review what government does and to eliminate things or to restructure things and look at the way government does and help them to try and come be more efficient. And so that's what we went into the Sunset Commission, the people who are on it, that's what we looked at doing. And then there was a little bit of buzz around that, well, you got a Sunset Commission, it's not getting rid of anything. And there was a little bit of pressure from members from both parties on that, that were throwing barbs at the Sunset Commission. But the boards that were reviewed, for the most part, were doing what they were told to do, and they were doing it very efficiently, and they weren't taking any general fund dollars. So if we'd gotten rid of them, their functions would go on, but the governor would be overseeing them in the Department of Administration. So we wouldn't have really gotten rid of anything.
Representative Christie.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, thank you for the background on that. I think that this committee then also has the ability to improve on that if there are deficiencies in the Sunset, to make it a tool that would work to be able to accomplish what this committee needs to know in the way of information to be able to make allocations to fund government. We're going to be just under $1 billion in this committee alone. And in a matter of January to the middle of April, we're going to be asked to spend another $1 billion in the next biennium without the benefit of knowing what's happening underneath the other layers of the onion. And so I'm just thinking that we have a golden opportunity here to take a few days and figure out how we would put that on a schedule and fund those and to be able to improve on something. I think in everybody's heart of heart, they don't think that it's zero or 100. We're looking for progress in that direction. And with the allocations that we have on almost $1 billion, I suspect that we could find whatever we need, $100,000, $150,000, $75,000 in that almost billion-dollar budget to put resources to bear to help this committee know and the legislature how money is being spent.
Thank you. And I would just mention Representative Murphy and I met with MMB yesterday, and I think we were both a bit shocked to find out what they figure it costs to hire a new person is $100,000 when you figure basic wages and benefits. And so your $50,000 would not go too far, I think.
Yeah, right.
And especially if we're looking at something as big as the charge was to look at, say, HHS. We might need something the size of the organization that Texas had with 25 people, and it'd be $2.5 million. So I'm just throwing that in based on the conversation we had yesterday. Yes, Representative Crisco.
And Mr. Chair, I'm not really arguing specifically the dollar amount. I'm arguing, I guess, the concept. Yeah. And in a $1 billion budget, could we as a committee ask for and set aside money to help us to aid in our efforts as citizen legislators who are here 5 months out of the year to be able to make those kinds of decisions when every election there are new people that are brought to bear to the legislature who have various levels of expertise and involvement on this? I think that we seriously handicap ourselves unless we look at putting a tool in place to help us as elected officials spend almost, out of this committee, $1 billion. And that, and I will say no more, but that's just my my philosophy and thought on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to plead the whatever amendment for freshmen we get, but I'm going to plead that one. A question is, what I haven't heard yet, and I'm new to this, is there a need that we're losing that, obviously this was put in place for a need. What is that need, and have we lost that?
Representative Murphy. You're referring, Representative Sunset Commission, or perhaps Representative Nelson, since you were appointed to the commission, that you can discuss the need, or the perceived need.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Crescia, as I said earlier, I think that's our job as legislators. I did not support the Sunset Commission, but I asked to be on it because I wanted to make sure it didn't turn into a witch hunt type of a thing. And I thought the procedure, the process we went through for the most part last year after our initial getting organized was relatively what I would have, if I would have perceived it, relatively what we should do. But at the end of the day, and if you look at the report from last year, we also talked about if we're going to continue this on, we need to fund staff and do it. As we listen to the people from Texas who've been doing this for 27 years, and have not sunsetted a whole lot of stuff. I think less than a handful of things that they've actually gotten rid of. And we actually got, we had one group come to us last year and said, we're no longer necessary, get rid of us. And we eliminated them, which is maybe surprising to some people, but there was a group that they, that it was the Labor Interpretive Center that came forward and said, we got the monument out on the lawn out here in the Capitol, and there's no need for us to go on any further, so get rid of us. And so we did. And so, I mean, that's, we can do that as a legislature on our own. We don't need a commission to tell us to do that if we're not going to fund it, to fund the staff needed to do the investigation process and look into it, because otherwise all we're relying on is reports from these agencies, and they're going to tell us what they want to tell us. And without the staff to look at them and do an audit like Mr. Nobles does that says this is what we can do, I don't think it does the way it does the thing that people wanted it to do. Now, there are different opinions as to why the commission was done, and Mr. Representative Leidiger expressed some of those, and I think Representative Pepin would express some of those, that why they think it needed to be done. But I personally think it's something that's our job as legislators to do, and we should be doing that every day and every time when we look at things and every time we create a budget, that we should be looking at where we can cut government, where we can make it more efficient, and do that on our own. And that's our job to do it.
Representative Precia.
And thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson. So, and I understand that, and so then that begs me the other question of, and I agree, Representative Dean, that we should be, but can we? I mean, can we really do that? Knowing our schedules, knowing what we do, I should read every bill, and I try to, but I'm trying to be honest with myself. I have 5 kids who like to talk to me once in a while. I have 2 dogs and a wife that I'm waiting for the text. I think I'm still married. But my question is, can we? Can we effectively do it? And that I'm asking the high-level question. I wasn't here for all of whatever perceptions happen, and I'm trying to get to context, but my job to go back is to defend the decisions that I try to make here, and the question is, just as you said, Chair Murphy, I don't want to give any obfuscation. I don't want to go back and say, yep, you know what, we do a great job of reviewing all this when we literally don't have the time. So that's my question. Should we? Yes. Can we?
I'll leave it with that. Yeah. Let's, Representative Detmer.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Murphy, if we could turn to page 5.
Of the bill.
Page 5.
Of the amendment.
Of the amendment, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Line 5.24. I just have a real problem with that. And, you know, during I didn't bring it up during the committee when we heard the testimony, because there were so many great things that were said about Nellie Stone Johnson. I was given some information that at one time she was part of the Communist Party, and is this something that the CAP board was realized that was her membership at one time, and have they approved it, or could you just give me an answer there?
Representative Murphy.
I believe that it had not yet been to the CAP board when Representative Mullery presented the bill to us. We were the first ones to hear the bill. And from us, it would go to the CAP board, because nothing can be put into the Capitol without the approval of the CAP board.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Denver.
You know, I don't know if there's any other statues or busts in the Capitol that those people were part of the Communist Party, but I just feel uncomfortable with it, and maybe the CAP board is fine with it, but it wasn't brought up during the testimony. There's a lot of positive things said about her, and I know you knew her personally, but I just had to bring that up.
I never knew her as a communist. Yeah. I believe that in 1950-something, there was a renouncement, but I don't know the details.
Okay. Thank you.
And we received a book, or I received a book last week, but I haven't had the opportunity to read it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, Representative Wells.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, I did want to actually ask about that as well, the Nellie Stone Johnson bust. Just kind of on a high level, regardless of any background that she may have had, just with what Representative Murphy said about we have limited resources and we're trying to hit our target and see where we can find funding for the things that are most important. And regardless of whether she was a communist or not, I do have a concern with putting that much money of $30,000 towards a statue when we have, I feel, much more important things to be focusing on. And also with that, I did have a question because I'm also on the Legacy Committee, and there's funding allocated for the same statue in Legacy, and unfortunately Representative Kahn is not in the room. I wanted to ask her as well, with both Representative Murphy and Representative Kahn in the room, where the funding would come from, if it would come from our budget here or the Legacy budget, because I don't see, I don't think we'd be funding it twice or paying from it from both. So I just had some questions on that.
Representative Wells, and I think we're getting some incidental information that one committee was looking at a statue, and the other, we were looking at a bust. Is that correct, Chair Murphy? I think the statue was like $70,000 and the bust was $30,000, so I'm not sure if it's...
Mr. Chair, I don't think anybody in either committee knows exactly how much a bust costs these days. Yeah. And I think in the Legacy Committee, they were talking about a matching fund also, and they were talking about another bust. But in Representative Mullery's presentation, he said that he wanted this to be relevant to children. And I thought a head on a marble stand isn't going to be relevant, even though it would be the only woman of color and woman bust that we have in the Capitol. That still wouldn't be relevant to little kids. And Nellie Stone Johnson was relevant to people of all ages and to little children and to middle school children and high school children and to students and people that did lifelong learning kind of things. And I said to Representative Mullery in the hallway the other day, I said, wouldn't a statue of Nellie Stone Johnson be a lot more relevant than a head on a marble pedestal? And he said, a bust or a statue, I don't know. But he didn't care. Just that she had a memorial at the Capitol. And so I thought we should have a choice, and CAP Board should talk about the whole thing. Now, you have to know, you don't know, there's no way that you would know. I have 5 statues in my backfield. I have 5 statues that represent the Murphy kids. And so my collection of statues that are made out of steel that a local artisan made for me, they represent my brother Leo, my brother Pat, my brother Paul, my brother Jim. Leo and Paul are out there, 6 feet tall, quarter of a mile away down in the field, sawing wood. Pat and Jim are pitching, Pat's batting, and Jim's pitching a ball. And then they're in gold, gold paint. And then closer to the house, where I can see from my kitchen when I'm washing dishes, is this little girl, curly hair, red dress, brown Oxfords, and anklet socks, representing Mary Catherine, who's probably running in the house, as a neighbor woman said, to tattle on what the boys are doing. So I'm into statues. So that's how I put bust or statue. But Representative Kahn just stuck with bust. But I don't know how much a bust for the Capitol would be. And the boys, the girls doing fine in the backfield, can see the tops of her legs now, but you still can't see her feet because they're covered in snow. But the boys need repainting. So they're good memories. People come by and they say, this is great. They have relevance to kids. Just some head on a pedestal back in the field wouldn't mean much to anybody. So that's off the track and all, but we needed a story too.
Are there any other?
Mr. Chair, there may be people that came to testify.
Yes, I was just going to ask that, Chair Murphy, if there's anyone in the audience, especially those who may have come from some distance first, who would like to testify, or anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against, to make comments on the bill. Anyone? Yes. Ms. Lee, please come down.
Okay.
Please identify yourself for the record,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International, R&R Family Centers. The reason I'm giving some input on the bill is because all along we had tried to get a bill heard, and even though it wasn't, we were hoping, you know, that the on the Senate side it might be traveling. In the beginning, when they asked for input of what we requested of this committee, we submitted the survey, and we talked about some of our specific needs and what we had hoped from this committee. We represent over a number of organizations, but in particular we represent over 20 service provider organizations that represent a broad range of services, cultural and bilingual, and that also service veterans. And they do services related to education, training, employment, health care, housing, legal services, children and family services, elderly services, and so forth. We work with the populations most in need, but who receive the least amount of help and services unless we do it. And we provide the most bang for the buck compared to other nonprofits. We have problems in overcoming barriers because of discrimination and barriers to access to funding. And we previously gave you folks a handout, something similar to this, that talked more about the organization. So I won't get into that, but I do want to say that we have unique strategies that benefit other organizations. We have strategies that have done job creation and growth of the economy. And we also had a target as far as helping towards President Obama's goals as far as 100,000 1,000 jobs for veterans, and that's in one of your handouts where we talked something about that. We also had targets as far as reaching out to the 400,000 veterans and their families and helping with the homeless veterans. And some of that information is contained in the materials presented. We feel we answered the call to duty that President, as Commander-in-Chief, had given us.
Ms. Lee, if yes. I can interrupt, can you keep your testimony to the amendment or to the spreadsheet, financial spreadsheet, so we know what it is specifically that you're referring to?
Well, we're talking specifically about what we were hoping to fund through the Department of Veterans Affairs, because we were talking about veterans, but we also, the services extend to military affairs too, because they're beyond the Yellow Ribbon program and it's not talked about. So we're talking about an omission. And we're talking about how we provide services, in that we had requested some funds, and that's why we were hoping, you know, that it would be considered at least what we're doing, even though we didn't get a hearing. That's why I'm giving some input.
Can you tell us which House file it was that you you're referring to?
Some of the members know that we tried to get around for a House file. It has a companion. We have a Senate file, 1547, that talks a little bit about some new strategies. And like I say, we wanted to prove to you that we can do some of the things we were talking about. We worked with employers as far as getting 5,000 of the 100,000 jobs for veterans. And we also got federal funding that we thought, because in the past biennium we didn't get any of the funding, that we sought it at the federal level. And what happened at the federal level is they gave funding to Minnesota, but it ended up going through department to DEED and ended up in their Veterans Division, which they used to hire 26 people. All we're saying here is that we have qualifications to do a number of things, like the curriculum and certifications we're talking about, and the housing development and so forth. And we provided materials as far as support for that. And all we're saying is that we would like some consideration too, as far as, you know, the budget, even though we're being admitted. So this is why, you know, we're providing the testimony now.
And I have just received some information that neither DEED nor MHFA are within our purview in state government.
No, so we're not talking about DEED. We're talking about when you talk about employment of veterans, as far as nonprofits being able to help veterans with employment and services and housing and so forth, that we're explaining what we have accomplished, even though we didn't have any funds. So our bill had tried to ask for some funds, but we're talking about new models that we would be presenting in the different areas, and we're trying to give our qualifications for being able
to
do that. I
think, and you know, until we have a bill and something that we can have looked at or have seen or rejected, it would be very difficult for us to comment on what you're
we
saying.
Believe it might be going to conference committee. That's why. So we wanted you to know the issues.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience who has comments or questions? If not, what do we do now, Madam Chair? Do we lay this over?
Mr. Chair, may I suggest that if agencies are individuals and committee members have amendments that they try to get them done by 4 o'clock tomorrow. And if they can't get them done by 4 o'clock tomorrow, if they could get them done by 9 o'clock on Monday, but certainly some could be done by 4 o'clock tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And Ms. Connolly and I will discuss tomorrow with Representative Detmer and Mr. Marble
about how we're going to play it next week. And we have committee time scheduled for 12:30 to 2:15, our regular, or 2 o'clock, our regular time, on Monday and Wednesday. But we also have evenings available also that we can use. And we'll set the schedule depending on what Representative Dempmer and Mr. Marble and Ms. Conley and you and I discuss tomorrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would encourage Representative, to the extent that you can, to get the bills in as early, or the amendments in as early as possible, out of consideration for Mr. Shepherd and the rest of our staff who are extremely busy at this time of year.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair and
Representative Dempmer.
And Chair Murphy, thank you. I think we will certainly, you know, have all the amendments prepared for you by Monday for sure, and we'll work on getting some in on tomorrow. I have to be here anyway tomorrow, so that's working out okay with my schedule. And looks like then on Wednesday we'll be working with the amendments and the amended bill, and then voting on it on Wednesday. Am I correct? Or Wednesday night?
I hope so, Mr. Chair, but I hope that we have time. The amendments are just turned in on Monday at 9 o'clock. That might be a stretch, but we'll try. That I really have to meet with that time, because the other committees are depending on using the rooms and so forth.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I know Representative Mitt Wills has been looking over the minutes and checking the grammar.
Yes, so, actually, I did have a... Thank you, Mr.
So, would you like to move the minutes of March 21st?
First, I'd like to make a correction.
I knew it. Representative Wills.
On the second page of the minutes from our meeting on March 21st, in referring to the final vote on House File 573,
mm-hmm.
It's towards the top
of
the
third
page.
Third of the way down.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to reverse the aye and the nay on the final vote in order to have that be accurate. So for the members who voted aye, change that aye to a nay. And the members who voted nay, change that nay to an aye.
Okay.
And then it would be accurate.
Do we have them? So would you like to move the minutes as amended?
I would move the minutes as amended if the committee is agreeable to the change.
Okay. Are there any other comments on the minutes?
I like it the other way.
If not, the minutes are approved. Okay, yes. All in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
There's always one. And at this point, I think we're all set. That we understand, for all of us, not just our Republican friends, that if we have amendments, we should try to get them in as early as possible. And then with that, I believe we're adjourned until 12:30 on Monday. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.